trail. Hippity hop and Easter's on its way. Bringing every girl and boy baskets full of Easter joy. Things to make your Easter bright and gay.
Hi, everybody. This is Into the Dark. We got a great show for you today, but before we get started, just a reminder, if you want to give some money to this radio station and keep the magic going, go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. See you guys on the other end of the theme music. Stay tuned for Into the Dark.
Skeptic among believers, and the believer among skeptics.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Who are the witches?
Magic, necromancy, and witchcraft.
Wake up! They're all about you! All around!
They're not heroes.
The often erotic world of the witch.
A journalist with an inside knowledge of witchcraft.
It's a sex thing deep down, of course.
Hey everybody, welcome to Into the Dark, the show that takes you to every witchy where and when you've ever wondered about. We got a great show for you today. I'm going to be talking to Hope Diamond of Cult of Hope about her magical journey and going into the pagan origins of Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. And also going into a listener question about mice. So, got a jam-packed show for you today. And I feel like I should mention, hi everybody. My name is Cooper Wilhelm. I don't think I've formally done the whole sort of like, hey, hello, this is my name kind of thing that I feel like people tend to do with radio shows. So nice to meet you or re-meet you if you've been here since episode one about divination with Swan Dristy, where I interviewed a psychic rat. Hi, I'm Cooper. Hello. So let's get into the joys of the day. So today, as you I'm sure are well aware, is Easter. And Easter is a fun holiday where we celebrate the rebirth of an important religious figure. And what's interesting about that, of course, is there are many sort of figures from different religions that may or may not predate Christianity that have figures that are similar to Jesus in this regard. For example, you have Horus, who was born on December 25th, died and was reborn. You have Ishtar, who was sacrificed by being tied to a stake naked. He died, he came back to life. You have Mithras, who was born on December 25th, and followers would celebrate the spring equinox, which is more or less upon us. But one of the sort of precursors to Easter that I want to talk about in particular is the Roman rite of Hilaria. So Hilaria talks about or celebrates or recognizes an incident that sort of, you find it kind of arising from Turkish religious traditions, finding its way into ancient Greece, then into ancient Rome. And the basic premise goes like this. There was a daemon, which is sort of like a demon, but in a more sort of morally neutral form. It's like a paranormal, supernatural figure, but they don't necessarily want to destroy or do evil things like demons do in the Christian tradition, though at the same time, they're not necessarily good either. And this daemon was known as Agdistis. And the thing about Agdistis is that Agdistis was a hermaphrodite, had both male and female genitals, and apparently the gods of Olympia, or Olympus, Mount Olympus, the gods of Olympus, were upset by this. And so they cut off Agdistis's male genitals, leaving the female ones behind. And so Agdistis became Sibyl, a sort of mother goddess figure, and the genitals became an almond tree. And when that almond tree bore fruit, Nanna, the daughter of a river god, took one of the almonds and put it to her chest and sort of absorbed it and became pregnant. And when she gave birth to a god called Attis. And the thing about Attis was that she abandoned Attis. Attis got raised by a goat and then by some human foster parents. And then Sibyl, who was Agdistis, saw Attis and fell in love with this being who was essentially her son, but also sort of part of her. So it's sort of like a holy trinity, but with like more gender equality in reference there. And so she falls in love with Attis. Problem is, Attis is betrothed to the daughter of a king, possibly Midas. And so at the wedding ceremony, Cybele / Agdistis goes in and causes quite the ruckus. It's sort of like the end of The Graduate when Dustin Hoffman bangs on the glass in the church and he's like, Elena! But in this case, instead of the bride and Dustin Hoffman, who would be the Agadis figure in this, instead of, you know, blocking everyone in the church by putting a crucifix through the handles of the outdoor doors and getting on a bus, Attis just goes crazy and commits suicide by castrating himself. And this is really horrifying for a lot of people, including Cybele / Agdistis. So she decides to make his body such that it will never rot or disappear. And this was celebrated as a kind of fertility rite, with the idea being, you know, you celebrate the return or eternal nature of this beautiful being the same way you would celebrate the return of vegetation in the spring. And there are links, of course, to Easter, as we understand it now, and that's fun, worth thinking about, I would say. But we've got a listener question that I'd like to jump on right now, and that was, because we are, of course, a resource for the community, and if you have questions about magic, the occult, witchcraft, or anything like that, do send that to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. That's intothedarkrfb@gmail.com, because you are listening Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn. So the question we have for today is, dear Into the Dark, is there a magic way or magic spell for getting rid of mice in your house? Now, this is an interesting question, because of course, the obvious answer for this is get a cat, which are sort of magic-y, you know, witches are often associated with cats, or, you know, just mouse traps. My dad used peanut butter on those. But if you want to go, if you want to go the magic route, you just got to find yourself a good old-fashioned banishing spell. And there are a lot of banishing spells out there that can be a lot of fun. And most of them are not rodent-specific. They're for banishing evil spirits, bad influences, just people you don't like very much. And there are a lot of ways of doing this. I mean, some of them are like easier and simpler than others. If you want to go the full sort of intense route, which, I mean, some people like, you know, they like to think that they're doing the work, they're putting in the effort to follow a very strict series of steps in a recipe, then you might want to try the lesser banishing ritual of the pentagram. And this is something that we have at least as old as the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. It's probably older than that. I wouldn't be surprised if they also do it in the Ordo Templi Orientis. But Tim Maroney does a good rundown of this that I'm sort of working off of. And the thing is, like, it's long, it's complicated. But it's basically a lot of sort of, it's a series of very specific steps that you can follow. I'm not going to go into all of them. You can look this up on our site. When this becomes a podcast, I'll do a link to it. But just to give you a taste of the sort of stuff you'd be doing, it's involves steps such as touching the forehead and saying Ate, touching the breast, say Malkuth, touching the right shoulder, say Vegubra, touching the left shoulder, say Vegedula, clasping the hands upon the breast, say Leolham, Amen. Turning to the east, make a pentagram, that of earth, with the popular weapon, usually the wand, and say, Eha! Or actually that's just saying the name of God. So say the tetragrammaton. It's a serious bit of, business. But if you want to do something simpler, you can do, a more sort of basic, banishing ritual. And a lot of these have to do with candles. So what you want to do for most of these is get yourself a black candle and maybe some white candles. Because the thing is, like, black candles are good for banishing, or at least a lot of sources will tell you that, whereas white candles are good for protection. So the black candle gets the thing out, the white candle keeps it from coming back. And I came across a particular banishing ritual that I rather liked that someone had sort of put together on YouTube named Noah Tempestari. And the video is about 18 minutes long, and it's like one he developed himself, so you should go check him out if you want to get more of what he does. But just to give you like a short rundown, what you need to do for that is to take a some coarse sea salt, so non-iodized salt, and make yourself a pentagram. So do 5 points and then connect the lines of those points in the shape of a star, and take some white candles. You can use tea candles for this. It's very easy. Put one at each point, and then take a black candle. Most people seem to use tapers or things like that, you know, the sort of long candles, and just rub it between your hands, maybe move your hands up and down it. Try to imbue it with energy, thinking about banishing the thing you want to banish, and then put that in the center of that pentagram, and sort of move your hands over it, making kind of a dome while you're sort of infusing it with energy and intention, and then light those candles, and maybe say some sort of spell to vocally register your intention. A lot of people use spells that rhyme. I don't like spells that rhyme, and mostly that's because I'm, by training, a poet more than anything else. I mean, I'm also, you know, I mean, I went to college for molecular biophysics and biochemistry, and then switched over to poetry because I wanted to go where the money was. And one of the things I sort of found is that I really disliked rhyming poetry because it's hard to do well. A lot of people can do it, but it feels, I don't know, it feels forced. It feels sort of overly clever, except for like certain poets who are very good at it. Robert Frost, Philip Larkin, Elizabeth Bishop. But that's just me. Another banishing ritual you can do with a black candle, which is a bit simpler, just get a big black candle, write the name of the being you want to banish backwards on the candle with like a knife, you know, carve in that name, and then burn that candle down while saying some sort of, once again, just verbal registering of your intention. For example, the source that I'm working off of for this one says in their get rid of anything spell that Aaron Leicht put together, says, say something like, so to go through like his specific spell, his sort of plan is, when the moon is full, carve whatever it is, the name, backwards into a black candle, take pins, drive them through the candle between each letter of the name, and you can write down what you're sort of trying to achieve in a piece of paper, fold it, put it under the candle, and then burn one letter of the name each day that the moon wanes. And the moon is a big part of this. A lot of these rituals say that if you want to banish something, do it during the full moon. That's when you can really summon the energy, summon the gusto necessary to both manage things and to protect yourself. So then the idea is to take each pin and stick it in the written piece of paper when the candle has burned down, and then to take that written piece of paper and the pins and the candle wax and run and toss them into a running body of water, and then leave and do not look back at the water as you go. And there's a lot to be said for the idea that like running water is used in magical rituals as a way of sort of keeping something locked down. In the previous episode where we talked about how to make a man impotent, part of that include taking basically a talismanic connection to that person and then putting it under running water. And the presumption would be that he would stay impotent until that thing was removed from the running water. But at the same time, like a lot of this, like, you know, figure out what makes sense for you. You know, if you want to use something sort of basic, like get a candle, do some stuff with that, that could be good. If you want to do something much more complicated, like that that ritual from the Order of the Golden Dawn, the sort of lesser banishing spell of the pentagram, you could do something like that. It's just what is making you feel your most witchy, what is helping you channel those witchly energies. And to that effect, you can also incorporate other elements. So there's a banishing spell that people use that sort of has a long, rich history, and it's that of the It has a number of different names, but basically perhaps it's like the Vinegar of the Four Thieves. And while the story sort of changes about how this originates, the basic premise goes like this. There was a village in Europe many hundreds of years ago that was hit by plague, and four thieves in the village each contributed different ingredients to a jar full of vinegar and garlic. And what they are sort of is debated, but they put those in, those different separate ingredients, one each, and then drank of it, and they were the only survivors of the plague in that village. And then they were caught robbing houses that were empty because everyone else in the village had died. They were almost hung, but to save themselves, they traded the recipe of this vinegar jar. So for these vinegar, it's hard to say what exactly you should put in there, though some possible things that you can include, besides the vinegar and the garlic, so use very good vinegar and use like garlic that you have peeled and chopped up. You can also include any four of the following: black or red pepper, cayenne or chili pepper, lavender, rue, rosemary, mint, sage, wormwood, thyme, or coriander. And this can be used in a number of different rituals and rites. It's I think used in either the voodoo or the hoodoo tradition sometimes to split up couples that you don't want to be together anymore. But if you want to use it as a sort of banishing spell or to protect yourself from something, if you want to use it for a banishing spell, the trick would be to write the name of the thing you want to be banished on a piece of paper, soak the paper in the vinegar, and then fold the piece of paper as small as you can and bury it in dirt. And if you want to use it to protect yourself, you can sprinkle it around the perimeter of your property to keep magical intruders away. And so, like with this, of course, you would write the name of the mouse, or just the word mouse, something like that. And that would be sort of the best way to sort of incorporate this into this. I should mention also, once you have all the ingredients you want in your jar of vinegar, you should let it sit for 4 days, shaking it once a day. And you should have it sit anytime, really. I was looking for, like, in my notes to see if there's anything about what the moon should be doing, but I think you just do it anytime. So to recap, four thieves vinegar, take a jar of good vinegar, put in some peeled minced garlic, then four other items from the list mentioned before, and I can put that up when this becomes a podcast version on the site, and then use that for your magical purposes once it has sat for 4 days and stewed. But, you know, these are all sort of general banishing techniques. I have also found something specifically for getting rid of mice. So if you don't want to do the cat and you don't want to do any of these sort of like more involved things, here's what you need to do. Wait for the full moon. Once again, full moon is very important. And then take four yellow candles and a sprig of lavender or heather. And on the full moon, light the four yellow candles in the shape of a square. Place the sprig of lavender or heather inside the square and then chant, "Creatures, be gone. No harm to be done. Be on your way from this house today." So say that, "Creatures, be gone. No harm to be done. Be on your way from this house today." Let the candles burn for a few hours and then relight them every day until they have burnt down. So that's a spell specifically for getting rid of rats and mice, which is fun. So, you know, thanks for sending in that question. If anybody else has a question for our research department, send that to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com or contact me on Twitter. I am at Cooper Wilhelm, which is my name, as I said at the beginning of the show, which may be the first time I sort of said, "Hey, this is my name." So hi everyone. Hello. So next we're going to move over to my interview with Hope Diamond. Hope is a tarot reader, a musician here in New York City, and she's been exploring witchcraft and matters of that sort for quite some time. And we talked for a while. We met in a beer garden in Queens that was outdoors, and we talked about her spiritual journey, which is interesting. I mean, I found pretty interesting because she came from a very sort of strict Christian background and then moved over to witchcraft and sort of more occult practices. And it's interesting because, like, I particularly found it interesting just because, like, it mirrored my own sort of history of growing up a very devout Christian and then having that kind of fall away and then finding spirituality more in things like witchcraft, which is interesting because, of course, I mean, you hear stuff like this, but, like, I'm sure it's possible for people to maintain both. Like, I'm sure there are Christians who do witchcraft, and I'd love to talk to one. So if you are a Christian witch or a Christian who does magic, or you know someone like that, by all means, please contact me, intothedarkrfb@gmail.com or on Twitter, and, you know, love to chat. You don't have to, you can do it anonymously. You can also just send me an email and I can just sort of give people the gist of things. So even the way you talk, your syntax will not reveal who you are. But here's that interview, and I'll talk to you guys on the other side.
I mean, just like off the bat, like, what got you into this? Like, was this a family thing or?
No. My family is Reformed Baptist. They're super conservative Christian, and they were like, I was not allowed to read Harry Potter.
Wow.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings was okay because that was written by a Christian, but Harry Potter was witchcraft. And I always had an aesthetic interest in the occult, but the only spiritual practices I had been exposed to were Christianity. So I sort of, because I had a negative feelings about Christianity, I wasn't able to apply spirituality to the occult, so I was drawn to the material things of the occult, like tarot cards and crystals and the witch archetype, and those elements of art and aesthetic really appeal to me. So I began to explore those. I've always loved Stevie Nicks and Celtic music and Enya and fairies and mythology. So that sort of, those things paved like a worldly entrance into the occult. And then the more I began to study that and grow and cast off Christianity and realize there were other forms of available spirituality out there that were not in that super rigid Bible thumper tradition, I began to actually appreciate the meanings, the symbolism behind all the occult aesthetics and art. So that's, I would say that happens. My own spiritual development probably started happening really fully like about a year ago, like last February or March.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You're like still pretty like new to the like sort of spiritual side of things.
Yes.
How long were you dabbling in more like kind of the aesthetics before that?
I mean, pretty much my whole life, like since I was always interested in fairy tales and fantasy fiction during adolescence and teen years. And then when I was a teenager, I got really interested in fairies and fantasy, but sort of kept it into the realm of make-believe and didn't, it was hard for me to see a way to relate to that personally. I still sort of viewed it as a mythological legend of yore that I could search after and find, but applying it to my life and practice was a little scary.
What about it scared you? Was it that it was sort of like taboo and not Christian, or is it something else?
It was hard for me to take seriously because mythology and spirituality will always be there, but in the Christian circles, it's, and in much of the modern Western world, it's, you can't get rid of it, so you have to distort it into some removed, far-off myth that is a story, that's a fantasy, that is not relatable to you.
Right.
Because if it were, then you could get personal power from it, and you wouldn't have to be bowing down to the Christian God and the patriarchy. So.
Okay, so you felt like there's a lot of pressure to just discount.
Exactly.
And what initiated that shift for you? What made you sort of feel like you could apply this work?
Well, I was at a really bad place in my life, and, thank you very much.
We got a seat.
And, I wasn't sure what to do, and I was going through a lot of personal struggles and depression, and, I turned to a very introspective state in my life, and that made me reflect about a lot of things, including that part of me that I had disconnected from such a long time. Because I was connected to the spiritual realm when I was a child, even though I didn't know of a way to relate relate it to myself personally, I still was enamored with a fantasy of mythology. And then, you know, early adulthood was more completely casting that off. And then as I grew and developed and wanted to return to how I was before, I experienced a lot of personal struggles. That was one of the big influences in my teen years, so I thought I would revisit that, and then what I had accumulated from life experience really taught me that there was applicable truth and wisdom in that, and there was an interactive practice.
So are there any traditions that in particular drew your attention? Because you mentioned like the sort of Celtic Druid
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff, but like was that when you went back, is that sort of where you landed or did you try a little bit?
No, when I went back, probably about I first started getting into tarot and crystals on more of an exploratory level in 2013.
Okay.
And that was, I wanted to have magic in my life, but I thought that fantasy and Celtic legends were all, you know, I liked them, but I didn't take them seriously. So I, for a while, for about 2013, 2014, and 2015 almost, like, so for 3 years, I tried to study the occult as more of what I found in the bookstores as far as with crystals and tarot and get into the more technical, metaphysical level and understand it from a more adult perspective so I could take it seriously. But then it was just earlier this year that when I really started doing music, that opened up my imagination. I began to see a lot of similarities between music and the spiritual meanings there and the abstract storytelling and how that relates directly to the occult and how the beautiful imaginative fantasies of my teen childhood years were just an abstract telling of the more scientific, methodical things I had learned in the modern occult world.
Okay, so like when you look at like sort of the modern occult, what sources in particular do you like sort of think of as being like important to you and like sort of influential in your way of thinking?
You mean as far as books I've read? Or?
Yeah, like books or thinkers or...
Well, I really... one of the first modern occult books, non-fantasy fiction occult books I read was The Satanic Witch by Anton LaVey.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, and I didn't identify as a Satanist, but I wanted to learn about sexuality and seduction. Mm-hmm. And I don't follow everything in that book, but I thought it was very interesting to read that from his perspective. He's very analytical and psychological. Robert Greene's books are also very helpful. I don't think he's considered a traditional occultist, but he's written The Art of Seduction, The 48 Laws of Power, and Mastery. And those are all very seemingly secular books, but they focus on the personal power within you and in using historic examples as to how people throughout history use their personal power to get what they wanted. And personal power is really another form of magic. So that's also what I've thought has been very helpful. And then tarot in and of itself, just studying the tarot cards. Right now I have several like encyclopedia tarot books I'm going through and I'm taking notes on each of the major arcana and then writing essays on them. And just learning about it through that, it's, you're not reading it from one source, you're gleaning from a lot of different things. So I would say if you have an area of interest in magic, something that piques your interest, whether it's crystals, tarot, runes, herbal healing, read as many books on the subject as you can, and then pick and choose what resonates with you, and that will be your practice.
So it's a very, like, it's both like sort of a study and an intuitive.
Yes. Kind of thing. And with magic, that's, if I could say anything about it, it's, you have to marry your personal intuition with academic study. And that's something that I think is a lack of those two things coming together is very prevalent in our current society because people either think they have to be technically minded, scientific, or artistic, and you can't be both. But the true whole human being will find a way to be both. The true Renaissance person, and that was a quality that was really demonstrated in the Renaissance era, the the complement of art and science and spirituality and music, and I think that it's hard to have one without the other.
And so when your interest in the occult, this occult, your cult studies that you're doing, how do they play out in the music you're doing?
Well, they come from the same place.
Okay.
The music I'm doing right now, I'm working with a couple of other musicians, and we're in the process of forming a band. I'm also working on some solo material, and within the next month, I'll be starting a YouTube channel where I will be playing some of my solo material as well as making videos regarding the tarot.
Cool. Okay.
So music and magic both come from the same place of introspection and figuring out how you work as a human being and where your personal power comes from, but then turning it around and reflecting it outwards. So same with anything I learned spiritually in terms of magic, like with the tarot, which is probably what I would consider my main magical practice. It helps me learn a lot about myself, but it's almost like when I get that information about myself, I want to turn it around and tell it to everybody else, and if giving them a tarot reading is the best way to get that across and to help them with whatever they're going through, then I can do it that way. Or with music, it's about sharing your personal experience to better other people and to better your own soul, and it's a mutually cleansing process that brings light and positive energy to both parties.
That's fantastic. How often do you read tarot just for yourself as opposed to for somebody else?
It's hard to read tarot just for myself. It was when I first started reading tarot, it was easier to do it on myself because I didn't know so much about it.
Yeah.
And I would just open the little booklet that comes with the deck and be like, oh, this card means this.
Like the standard red or white kind of stuff.
Yeah. And now when I give tarot readings, I have a better understanding of what the cards technically mean. But I also try to tap into my more intuitive side with not being afraid to say random things if they really come to me in a meaningful way. And it's challenging enough to do that with another person.
Yeah.
Because if what you're saying isn't, you can't say, oh, I'm saying this because this card means this. If you're giving them something on top of that that's just based on your intuition, it can be a little scary because you're like, is this awkward? Are they going to think I'm weird for saying this? And then applying that to yourself, it's hard to step away from that and see if you're giving yourself this reading because of what you want yourself to hear or what you really think. So,
have you ever made any sort of like big life decisions or had any sort of important revelations through a tarot reading or something like that?
Oh, through one I've received?
Yeah, or done for yourself?
Well, I think one of the biggest life revelations I had was when I first started getting my cards read. I went to several tarot readers back when I lived in Pennsylvania, and then I went to one in upstate New York on a family vacation, and they all said that I had the gift as well. And the first time that was told to me, I immediately wanted to discredit and think, oh, you probably say that to everyone to make them feel good about themselves. And, you know, I was very skeptical. And then, but it happened with two other tarot readers, and I thought that maybe I should take that seriously. So that's when I purchased my first deck, and it was a slow process to learn to take it seriously and to really study it and believe in my own intuition, but that was a really positive personal growth experience. So
that's fantastic. So in terms of, so you've been designing jewelry and clothing as well.
Hmm? No, I don't design jewelry and clothing.
Okay, that's somebody else's Etsy I found. Never mind.
Oh, wait, was it? I do have an Etsy shop.
Oh, okay.
But that was, wasn't really anything handmade. It was, I used to sell vintage clothing.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't do that anymore. I actually, not full time, but I actually just shot a bunch of items from my personal collection that I was getting rid of, so
there'll
probably be a couple hundred listed later on this month if anyone wants to check that out.
So to what extent did you feel like, once you were able to take all this seriously and feel like this is an expression of your own power, what role did it play in your sort of larger life? Like, how, like, because you seem pretty open about this, like, with your friends, but, like, a lot of people, or, like, with people generally.
I don't keep it hidden from anybody.
Okay. And did this, like, make things weird with your family at all, or?
Not, my relationship with my family isn't very healthy, and I'm fine being perfectly open about my relationship with my family. It's the honest truth, and if it offends them, they're the ones who believe what Jesus says about the truth will set you free, so if they don't like to hear it, that's fine. So, like I said before, I was raised very conservative Christian, and when I was 18, I moved out of my parents' house and moved in with a boyfriend, but I didn't tell them about it. I lied to them and said I was living with a friend, and then when they found out that I had premarital sex, their first move was to cut me off financially.
Damn.
Yeah, and I wasn't doing any... I was in college. I was working two jobs. There was... The only bad life decision I was making was having premarital sex. So given that, my relationship with them, aside from the cult, has been very inauthentic and tension-filled. I moved to New York in 2014.
Where did you grow up?
Pennsylvania.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And I worked at a strip club. So, and that's something that, I mean, I haven't told them yet. If they hear on this interview, that's perfectly fine by me. But, so, aside from the occult, my relationship with them has been a little weird. Because I want to have a good relationship with them, but they're not very accepting of me at all. And adding the occult on top of that is very, it just amplifies an already, strange situation.
Yeah.
Like when I first started, I host a monthly event since last September called the Witching Hour, and it's immersive occult experience once a month at a bar in the East Village. And when I first started doing that, I was really, really proud of it. So I told my mom, and she started crying on the phone. So it's really hard for me to be able to talk to them about that at all, because I want them to be proud of me and to be proud of the progress I'm making with my life.
Yeah.
But the areas that I'm making progress in make them really sad. So, and they just shut down. So it's a very weird dynamic.
That's, I'm really sorry to hear that. So would you say that, like, you've sort of left that Christian upbringing more or less behind, or are there ways in which it sort of transfers into your occult spiritual practice?
Well, at first I didn't think so. At first I thought, you know, fuck Christianity, dear God, go fuck yourself.
Happy Easter, everyone.
Yes, I think that a lot of what I feel about Christianity has to do with my father and the type of Christian circle I grew up in, because I have family friends from my childhood whose families are Christian, but they have a really loving and healthy family. My dad was very dominant, emotionally unattached, kind of like, you know, an abusive patriarchal father. So I think my own views on Christianity are screwed because of the people who taught it to me. I think that true Christianity, to be a true Christian, I think you have to follow the two main principles of the Bible, which is love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And when it comes to a two-law Christian, then yes, I think in a lot of ways I would consider myself a Christian. But I was recently reading this book by Doreen Virtue called The Lightworker's Way. And that's about tapping into your own spirituality and using your spiritual gifts as sources of light and love and to help heal other people. And she's a Christian and she believes in God, but she also comes from a very New Thought background. So reading that book helped me to understand how Christianity, if you go to the spiritual core of its essence, can be the same thing as any other more occult spiritual practice. For example, in that book, she says that Christ, that wasn't really his name. Christ was a word used for people who emitted light and positive energy, and he just happened to have been so enlightened that people called him the Christ. So in a sense, if you have to ignore a lot of what the Bible says, and for Bible-believing Christians, what I'm saying, they would just listen to and think it was a bunch of bullshit because I'm throwing out a lot of the Bible. But I think that if you take out the cultural context of a lot of what the Bible says and go by what it really means, I think that it can send a very positive message about being a being of light and sharing that with the world and other people. And I agree with that. And if that's what it means to be a Christian, I will call myself a Christian in a minute. But
I honestly wish more people who identify as Christian would basically take that stance.
I know. It would be like if in 300 years, if people had found some way to take yoga and Buddhism and meditation and turn it into a way to manipulate people and abuse it.
Yeah.
So it's the real Jesus is probably very sad by how most of his claimed would-be followers are acting and how they abuse his teachings.
I mean, like, I was raised a sort of tambourine-hitting New England Baptist, and, like...
Tambourine-hitting?
You know, you play an acoustic guitar, and you have a big sweater,
yes.
And, like, honestly, like, the people who I felt, like, were most upholding Christian values a lot of the time happened to be, like, atheists or Satanists, honestly.
Yeah!
I mean, you know, a lot of very good Christian folks on your side, like, you know, my mom's a saint, but...
It's actions speak louder than words.
But tell me more about the witching hour. That's at the Tavern of the Three Cups, or the Bar of the Three
Cups?
Oh,
it's a Three of Cups Lounge
in
the East Village.
So, like, an immersive occult experience.
Yes.
What's that like? Walk me through it.
It started off as I made a post on Facebook wanting to do more tarot readings, and my friend was bartending there, and she said I could read tarot there the third Thursday of every month. And then two of her friends got involved, and we decided to take it to a more immersive experience. So each month celebrates an astrological sign.
Okay.
So this month it's actually 420, next Thursday.
Woo!
Yeah! Wear green. Is Aries. And we decorate the place with lights and crystals and a fog machine and have a different type of music, like witch house and classic heavy metal and a bit of Celtic New Age. So its focus is on witchcraft and having that very ritualistic ceremonial vibe. And then I offer tarot readings and special crystals that correlate with the astrological sign of that month. And then at midnight we do a ritual which is focused around the sign of that month and how to just an awareness of that sign and how to manifest those positive qualities into our own lives. And everyone comes forward and gets blessed by crystals and sage. And you can drink. There's a bar.
In terms of your use of crystals, like, what do you... Because I'm going to be honest. Like, as much as I'm, like, an occult, like, researcher-type person, I know almost nothing about crystals.
Okay.
I just know if they're, like... energy related or something. They're pointy.
Yeah.
Some of them are water soluble, apparently.
Yeah.
Just why you can't use them as a dildo. I've been warned multiple times, so...
Well, you can use a lot of them as a dildo, just not selenite.
That was the one I was wondering.
Yes, yes.
I mean, the wands I've seen of selenite, like, I don't... I guess anything. Anyway, sorry. So crystals. Tell me about crystals before I get down this rabbit hole.
Crystals are...
And this is a big topic, so if if you don't want to, like, get into... I mean, this could be, like, a whole other interview, probably. I should find a crystal person to talk to about crystals at some point. If you want to come back on the show and do, like, a crystal
player,
we can do that, too.
I would totally... I'll give you the brief rundown of it.
Okay, cool.
Crystals are... I view them... Like, the category of crystals for me is 50% energy connection and 50% placebo effect.
Interesting. Okay.
So, I think that in many ways, crystals are a physical item to to help you focus on whatever you're trying to do with them.
Okay.
Like if you're meditating and you're holding a green aventurine is really good for healing the heart, for good luck, financial prosperity. And so if you want to have your heart healed, or maybe have financial prosperity into your life, or need a lucky break, it helps if you're because we live in a physical world, it helps if you're physically holding an aventurine and concentrating it and feeling the energy, and you'll be concentrating to feel the energy from it. Whether or not there's any energy there or not is, it's very much in your mind.
Right.
But you'll be concentrating on that, and it'll help you to focus.
Okay.
I do think, though, and for a while that's mainly how I used crystals, but the more I've been trying to expand my knowledge of the spiritual realm and take it from spiritual things in an earthly setting to spiritual things in a spiritual setting, it's you have to be connected to both worlds, and the more I grow in connection to the higher worlds, the more I do feel an actual humming buzz of energy in those crystals. I think a lot of it has to do with faith, and then it will come more naturally to you. So, and as far as the placebo effect goes, even with placebos, even if crystals actually had nothing in them, if crystals were just, turns out they're all made out of plastic.
They're fancy rocks.
If that's all they are. Medical studies show that people who undergo placebos will, even if it's only 20% of people who are affected by a placebo, that's 20% of people in a study who use their minds and the belief they were getting healing to heal themselves. And that is being able to heal yourself and have power with your mind. And that is magic. So even if crystals in and of themselves don't have a magical property to them, they can be really great for training your mind to be more powerful.
That's fantastic. So if there is something, because, you know, you've got this forum now, say things to the magic-y people, because I've been staring at the analytics on this show, because, like, we do, like, a podcast after we do the radio show, and, like, we'll have, like, 10 listeners in Norway, and it's like, way to go!
Yay!
The world is surrounding.
There's a lot of good metal in Norway.
There's a lot of good metal in Norway. But, like, so, speaking to the people of Norway, and also, Ohio, I think, pops up a lot.
Okay.
You know, the kids, the magic kids.
Everyone.
What would you say to somebody who's, like, interested in this sort of thing, and they want to get involved, but they don't know what they're doing? Like, what advice would you give? How would you, what would you just, like, if you had to express a thing?
Well, I think that, especially to people who may not live in an area that's super friendly to magic, like New York, I think we're very blessed to have an open occult community and places and stores and classes and teachers and healers here.
Totally.
But if you live in an area of the world where that is either frowned upon or there's just not an availability to that, that's perfectly okay. We luckily live in a day and age where you can gain a lot of valuable information from the internet, from internet communities, Facebook, Instagram. Those aren't just for taking selfies. You can actually connect with people and form friendships and relationships based on mutual interest through that. But I think that at the end of the day, my local occult pagan spiritual community has been really helpful in learning things from other people.
Yeah.
But the most valuable things I've learned about my practice have been from the time I've spent alone in nature and from reading books. And you can do that anywhere. So magic is about, I think there are two things in this world. There's nature and things that humans do not create, and then there's the shit we create.
Yeah.
So the things that we don't create, how did they get there? I'm not going to get into a discussion about evolution and creationism right now.
Fair enough.
But it's still, we didn't do it, therefore it is exotic, it's mysterious, it's what refreshes us because it is outside of ourselves. So being in nature and connecting with that and just watching the different cycles of the seasons, being connected to the cycles of the moons, having respect for that,
yeah.
It really helps you develop an inner peace and inner stillness and inner self-awareness. And I turned to magic because of a lot of personal anxiety and problems I was going through. And I think a lot of people seek the spiritual world to find solace and peace. And you can't do that by buying a tarot deck or by buying runes. And it's very easy to try to solve your problems with the physical things of the occult world, the tools. And that's what I did for a long time. But when you really, the tools are meant to be used as ways to express what you know from within. And to find what you know from within is best found in just solitary time in nature, personal practice, the very, very, very little things. Like, start learning about the chakras, maybe meditation. If you have an interest in fantasy fiction, read fantasy fiction. You may think, well, this isn't going to actually teach me about magic. This is just some story somebody made up. That may be so, but it will stimulate your imagination on the right path. And once your imagination is stimulated, imagination and intuition are very tightly connected. And if your imagination is stimulated, your intuition is raised. When your intuition is raised, that combined with being in nature will make you aware of a greater sense of magic, and you'll be better called to follow a particular path with that and to explore your natural gifts to then be able to give back to other people.
That's fantastic. Thank you. And like, that was actually gonna be like the capstone like question, but you mentioned something that I'm like curious about, so I'm gonna, if I may, one more.
Yeah, I could talk for 5 more hours.
So you mentioned like finding your sort of pagan community here in New York or possibly in Pennsylvania. Like, how did you go about finding other people? Like, if you wanted a community, like, where did you turn to?
Well, the first friends I ever had who was into this, her name is Joy, and she owns this beautiful company called Cosmic Joy for All. She carves beautiful antler jewelry and studs it with gemstones, and she offers psychic intuitive readings. I've been friends with her since I was 17, and we were both going through some personal evolutionary changes. And she began to really get into the spiritual, and I looked up to her very much as an older sister figure. And so I became interested in that, and that's when I started getting into crystals and tarot. And she was sort of my first person I felt connected with in that. And I had another friend in Pennsylvania that I did that with as well, but there wasn't really much of community there. They were little shops, but they didn't. It was more like, come to our store, buy our stuff, and leave. And we have weird energy.
Yeah, yeah.
So here in New York, I started vending crystals at the Full Moon Market in Catland.
Okay.
And then that's how I met some people and just started making friends through that. I volunteered at Catland for a few months last year. And I'm trying to think. I think it's just a matter of finding people who share the same interests as you do and connecting with them. And right now, one of my favorite places to go to is the Fairy Den.
The Fairy Den?
Yes. My friend Elfling has that, and it's her apartment, and she sells beautiful healing crystals out of that. Her place is filled with such light fairy magic and positive energy. And it really, just being there and getting to know her and the healing that she's taught me through her crystals and her immersive meditation classes has helped me to grow a lot and tap into fairy magic, which was, like I said before, fairy fantasy fiction was a big part of my teen years. So, and you know, I met her like last month. So even within the past month, I've done a ton of growth as far as fairy magic goes. So the Fairy Den I would recommend. And then Annabelle Gatt has been a very helpful mentor to me as well, a really great teacher. She's a wonderful astrologer, and she teaches a lot of classes about horoscopes astrology, your rising sign, how to take the astrological elements and apply them to your own life. And she's been a very good guide with that. So connecting with the right, not only the right communities, but the right mentors and the right individuals as well. For anyone looking to explore their spiritual side, if you're able to tap into a spiritual community, that's great. And it's even better if you can find someone within that community who you can find as a trusted mentor or as a guide, someone who is not into the spiritual to boost their own ego, but who is in this world to help other people, because they will want to help you and teach you, and so you can both better spread knowledge and positive energy.
That's fantastic. So you don't have to go it alone.
Exactly. And someone who will also accept you for who you are and be open to you developing in new ways that may not be exactly how they developed.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me about this. And I hope you'll come back on later and like with your love crystals and maybe for magic once again.
Yeah, you are absolutely welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Big thanks to Hope Diamond for talking to me about her spiritual journey and her magical practice. If you want to follow her, learn more about what she's doing, go to cultofhope.com or check her out on her Instagram, which is also Cult of Hope. And be sure to maybe check out her next witching hour, which will be on 4/20. What? And before we actually started the interview, I had the recorder recording mostly so I could get a sense of the levels while we were there, and we were talking about the differences between Satanism and devil worship. And the thing is, like, I've done that on the show before. We've talked about that on the show like maybe 3 or 4 episodes ago, and I think I did a fair enough job, but her description of that difference was so good and so succinct that I'm really glad I was able to keep it or catch it on the tape. So here's what she said about the differences between Satanism and devil worship.
Satanism is more about viewing it's not about the actual devil, it's about acknowledging our fleshly desires and focusing on that and using Satan as almost like a cartoon, right, like a caricature of that. Devil worship is taking it literally.
Right.
And a lot of people think that when they think of Satanism, they think of devil worship, not actual Satanism.
And that was really good. Also, I just love the point that she made while we were doing the interview, and then after I turned everything off and we were just chatting before we left the beer garden to go our separate ways, that, you know, it's just, if you're interested in the occult, if you're interested in magic, don't shy away from depictions of it in fantasy fiction, other fiction, stuff like that, because a lot of those writers, they are interested in these things too, and so they might be basing them on things that are actual belief structures. Like, you know, personally, I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft and all his weird horror writing, and like, he'll talk about, you know, Dagon. And the thing is, like, it'd be easy to sort of think like, oh, maybe Dagon is fictional, in the same way that his sort of sorcerer figure Abdul Hazard is fictional. But then you'll Google it and you'll find that, oh, Dagon was a Babylonian fish god that presumably people actually worshipped at some point. So like, this is, you know, it's a good route to learn more. And if you want to learn more about anything really, and you want to have our research department look into it, go to intothedarkrfb@gmail.com. That's email me at intothedarkrfb@gmail.com, because listening to Into the Dark on Radio Free Brooklyn. And sick our research team on those questions and queries. And if you want to talk to us about your spiritual journey, about your magical practice, hit us up there, or go to at Cooper Wilhelm on Twitter, because that's where I am. Thanks for listening. Happy Easter. And stay tuned for our next show, which is Why Do We Only Listen to Dead People? Because, I mean, you know, it is the day for the dead to rise. Happy Easter, everybody. Thanks for listening.